The Glass in the Morning radio program, non-Powerball winning edition, 14th day of January, Thursday, here at WGCL. And we get in-depth with the Indiana Hoosiers, and no better person to get caught up with than our good friend and beat writer for Indiana men's basketball, Zach Osterman. He also covers football as well. So that means you have had a busy week, my friend. Thank you for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And strange, too, as Big Ten basketball is up and running, and there's no game in the middle of the week, which is interesting. The Hoosiers heading to frozen Minnesota later today for Saturday, 12:30 on the Big Ten Network's matchup. We'll start with basketball because the Hoosiers, Zach, are in first place. The schedule makers have been friendly to them, but I don't think that's a completely fair assessment. They have been playing some good basketball. They've won some unconventional ways. They've shown maybe a side of grit we haven't seen from some recent teams, and there they are, 4-0 atop the league. Is there anything to worry about heading to 0-5 in the league, Minnesota, on Saturday?
Without being flippant, I don't know if you saw any of the Minnesota-Nebraska game. I guess maybe that Minnesota beat Clemson, and now Clemson's running around beating ranked teams in the ACC.
The transitive property theory is hot and bothered on a Thursday morning.
There's a lot going wrong in Minneapolis, and certainly we have seen bad teams rise up and beat better ones in the Big Ten, particularly at home. And I know that is kind of one of those buildings that a lot of Indiana fans have a Pavlovian response to. When you tell them that you think Indiana is going to win up there, they just sort of they start twitching and thinking back to horrible performances of yore. But that is a game that, for a number of reasons, I think Indiana should be favored in, and Indiana, I think, is favored in.
Indiana should win the game from the simple point that they are better than Minnesota, and I think the opponent for this Indiana team moving forward isn't important. I have argued that Indiana is important moving forward because if they bring the effort and energy and want that you saw in that first half against Ohio State, they're going to be very difficult to beat any night. But that is the next step for this team, is to find that consistency. Would that be accurate?
I think so, and I think to sort of perfect it, because at the same time, you never want to be playing your best basketball until March, and that goes for anybody in the country. And so I think that as you continue to sort of figure out life without James Blackman, as you continue to sort of see how much can we expand, for example, what we're getting out of OG Anunoby, are we already kind of reaching his sort of peak capacity off the bench? Is there more we can get from him? As he gets healthier, is there more we can get from Juwan Morgan? He's pretty much healthy now, but he's just kind of getting back into the conditioning of it. Can you get guys like Colin Hartman and Nick Zeisloff kind of shooting a little bit more consistently, which you expect they will eventually? I think it's about sort of finding that consistency, perfecting that best performance, and then also maybe not wasting too much of it. The old joke from the Adam Sandler movie, don't waste the good surprise on January or February, because you need it in March.
And this Hoosier basketball team had one of these performances last year when Maryland came to town on a weeknight where Indiana made 157 three-pointers and blasted a really good Maryland team. But from that point on in the season, Indiana didn't play their best basketball. What makes Hoosier fans, or why should we be optimistic that they've learned something and this year will be different?
Well, I mean, I think it's certainly obviously a big part of what sort of undermined that good start. You talk about they were 5-1 in the Big Ten, tied with Wisconsin for first place after that game. A lot of what undermined that good start, frankly, was the fact that, I mean, that was the first game where Indiana started Colin Hartman at center, and it created these matchup problems that clearly just sort of threw Maryland a curveball it wasn't ready for. But the minute the rest of the league got film on this, they said, okay, there's now a half dozen ways that we can hit them defensively, because the reality is that's not a center that they're starting at center. I think that this team is just a little bit more well-rounded. I think it's deeper, even without James Blackman. I think you look at the bench contributions and you say, you know, that's a team that's got 2-3 legitimate potential leading scorer type players in its starting lineup. and then it's got four guys on the bench that can all come in and you know, somebody on the bench.
And I think that's interesting too.
Really good.
I think that's interesting too, because we heard earlier in the season, Tom Crean was really talking about developing a two deep. You know what I mean? We want to have a backup at every position. He really hasn't mentioned a lot about that, but his bench has been playing pretty solidly. It's a nice ham and egg. You get a couple guys one night, a couple other guys the next night, so you don't have to just lean on that sixth man as we've seen throughout some time. Maybe, you know, we have more than five starters, but we can only start five that angle. But is this the best depth that we've seen recently?
Certainly at the moment. I mean, the one thing I would say, and not to just sort of rain on the parade, I mean, part of that depth is freshmen, and the reality is the college basketball seasons tend to wear freshmen down. Now, particularly when you have guys coming off the bench, does that mean you can compartmentalize their minutes a little bit? You can manage them a little bit better than, say, you would a guy like Thomas Bryant that you need to start and you need to play a lot of minutes? Does that maybe extend their impact in terms of, you know, the course of the season? You know, or do they just not wear out? Because sometimes freshmen don't wear out. Sometimes they get stronger. But most freshmen do kind of tend to hit a wall at some point. That is a big part. It's funny, that bench is basically two freshmen and two grad transfers right now.
Both ends
can
of the spectrum.
Can you keep those freshmen, not, no pun intended, fresh long-term? Because I think that particularly on the defensive end and then rebounding, that's where those two guys are having a lot of impact off the bench.
The thing that stuck out to me the most of the Ohio State game was the effort Indiana put forth. And after the game, you heard, obviously, you were in the press room, and the angle that it sounded like to me, and I want you to either debunk this or help me out here, was it seems like when Indiana plays well, the effort is no problem. The next step becoming a good team into a great team is bringing the effort regardless of whether you're playing at home or not or on the road or not and the opponent. Is Indiana's effort right now dictated by the score on the scoreboard, and is that something they need to fix if true?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's so much the score on the scoreboard. I think that the score is a byproduct. I think that's somewhat fair. I do think Indiana is very much a momentum team. I mean, a team that it's going to play, if it can have one good possession and then two and then three and four, that's going to fuel 15 straight good possessions. It's a team that really knows how to kind of ride momentum. What was impressive to me with Ohio State, though, was we didn't, a lot of times we'd see this last year, certainly 2 years ago, there would be three, four, five good possessions put together, and you'd feel like Indiana was building ahead of steam, and then it would just kind of peter out. That was a team that saw Ohio State on the mat and didn't stop. And that was what was impressive to me, and that was what made me think, okay, this team might be figuring some things out in the larger sort of less tangible sense, because you don't see that killer instinct. You have not seen that killer instinct consistently enough at all.
No, you haven't.
Even just game to game for Indiana. And you don't actually see it a lot of places.
No,
Ohio State's got a lot of weaknesses. They're still growing. They're still very young. They are a team that's susceptible to that kind of performance. But I didn't necessarily think Indiana had that instinct in it either.
And you saw a little bit of what you're speaking about on Tuesday against Wisconsin. Indiana leads 13-6 or 13-7, then it gets outscored, whatever that run was. So there was a perfect example of how week to week this team can fluctuate. And I think a big key to that is Troy Williams. And Troy Williams, the level of his ceiling, as everybody wants to point out, is sunroof. Once you open it, it just keeps going up and up and up. And it seems like when he gets off to a good start, he had a driving straight line layup, nothing crazy. First bucket of the game, comes down to the other end, picks up an offensive foul, drawing an offensive foul against Ohio State. Boom, he's in the game. I'm going to use a Tom Creanism here. He's locked in from the word go, and all of a sudden, it's matching a career high. How does Indiana keep Troy Williams more towards that level than the 5 turnovers, 6 turnovers, 3 of 11 shooting type nights? How do you get Troy engaged? Because it seems like when he goes well, Zach Osterman's our guest from the Indy Star, that Indiana follows right behind him.
I think that's definitely true. And I think one thing, it was noticeable, Indiana had, and I can't give you specific things, but Troy Williams is also a player who operates really well in space, with or without the ball. Particularly without the ball, he's very good at finding space. He's very good at running a baseline, backdoor cuts, you know, sort of drifting out to the wing where there's where a defender doesn't follow him, either for a three-pointer, which has suddenly become a more viable part of his offensive toolkit, or to get the ball, draw somebody out, and just immediately attack them off the dribble. I think he was really one that was struggling for the lack of James Blackman Jr. as much as anybody else those first three games in Big Ten play. And just because I think the court got a little bit smaller for Indiana, and obviously court spacing is such a big deal for this team for any number of reasons, but I think the court got a little bit smaller, and I think that on and particularly off the ball, Troy Williams suddenly wasn't finding as much room as he wanted to. He was still rebounding the ball fairly well. It was a little bit up and down, but you still felt like you were getting decent effort and rebounding from him. Offensively, I think he just needed some time to kind of work through how to get the best out of himself in within the offense without forcing it, but without an extra sort of shooter to space the floor. I saw Troy Williams that just looked a little bit more comfortable in the post-James Blackman Indiana offense against Ohio State. I do think that you got to, you know, the less he turns the ball over, I think the more confident he is. That's just frankly down to individual improvement and focus. And
well, I think part of it also
can you lock in on keeping hold of the ball. But I agree with you. I think Williams is that kind of player for Indiana, and there's a part of me that really feels like he needed as much as anybody else some time to feel his way through the in the offense without Blackman.
When he keeps the game simple, he performs at a very efficient level. When he is playing the game north and south, going to the basket instead of east and west, he plays. It's just he makes it a lot easier on him, and he makes him harder to guard as well. Our guest this morning is Zach Osterman. He jumps in from the Indianapolis Star. You can find him at Zach Osterman on Twitter, IndyStar.com as well. He's the beat writer for IU Basketball, Indiana, Minnesota, 12:30, the Big Ten Network on Saturday in frigid Minneapolis. And other good news this week, on Monday evening, it was announced that Coach Kevin Wilson has been given, is this a new contract, a contract extension? What is the official terminology here?
Officially, this is a new contract. The old one's ripped up. This one replaces it.
Excellent. He had 2 years left on his old deal that, as you've mentioned, goes through the shredder. A six-year deal worth just over $15 million. This is showing that Indiana is in the game in football. Tell me why this is important for Coach Wilson, Indiana fans, and the Indiana program.
Well, it's important for Wilson. It's a big statement of support.
Because he didn't have a winning record. Let's be fair here.
Yeah, no, and he lost his bowl game, but he's also won three in a row against Purdue, and at some level, without trying to sound flippant, I don't know how you don't reward an Indiana coach.
I'm not arguing.
It's too rare. But I think that, you know, obviously it's a statement of support for Kevin Wilson. It is also, for me, and I've said this many times to basically anyone who's asked, this is a really big statement from Indiana football about wanting to be more competitive. And we don't know exactly what, I mean, you know, the line that I've used is it's going to double Wilson's pay. Now, obviously, I don't know if that's going to happen next year because a lot of times these contracts are backloaded. And so you're going to make 1.9 the first year, then 2.05 the second year, then 2.3 the third year, and 2.6 the fourth year, that kind of thing. And it averages out to 2.5 million or 2.55. But still, the idea of a contract that is worth that much money is something that is totally foreign to Indiana football in modern whatever. And if the contract is paying an average of that amount, then Kevin Wilson right now would have the seventh highest. Let's say that is his salary next year. He is now the seventh highest paid coach in the league. He was the 12th highest paid coach in the league at the beginning of this week. And that is... It tells college football Indiana is confident in Kevin Wilson. It also tells college football Indiana is ready to be more competitive financially across the board in football.
Yeah, you don't have
to. And I am very much of the opinion, and I've said this too all week, you get what you pay for in football because of the scope of the sport, because of the fact that it's kind of hard to fool people in football. You have to get a roster of 125 players and 85 scholarships, whatever else. There can't be a lot of smoke and mirrors, not at the Big Ten level, not in the Big Ten East.
you get what you pay for, and this is Indiana saying it is willing to compete financially for a better product on a consistent long-term basis.
Zach Osterman, the Indy Star, is our guest. At Zach Osterman on Twitter, IndyStar.com. The new contract will do three things. Number one, as you've eloquently put, Indiana doesn't have to answer the question anymore of why is your coach only getting paid this or why don't you take football seriously. Number two, with that contract, you don't have to answer on the recruiting trail, hey, what's going on in the next couple of years? How big of an impact is that going to be?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Wilson even said yesterday when we talked to him, he said, you're talking to high school juniors, and now you can guarantee you're going to be around for all of their career. You know, because he says you get guys who ask, I want to play in your offense. Is that offense going to be there for all 4 of my years? I mean, that the length of contracts, I think sometimes people look at it and shake their head, but it is in large part for recruiting, for the purpose of being able to ensure to recruits that, yes, I will be there. You know, I've got 5 years left on my deal, so I'll have 4 years left and you get to
it's a non-talking point anymore. That's the whole
and
thing.
The other thing, that is a large part of the reason for the length of deals. That and then just the distribution of wealth within the contract.
Now,
but it's a really big deal, and it's a big deal at this time of year. You're less than a month from signing day. You're also about to start all your junior days, which is why I think Kevin Wilson brought that up. This is the time of year when, like, the only thing you're focused on is making that final push in recruiting. And, you know, to go in armed with a new contract at much larger dollar amount, that's very useful.
We've seen Wisconsin lose assistant coaches over the last couple of years, and they're considered a Big Ten football powerhouse. They've lost them to bigger conferences for bigger paydays. With this new contract, is there any other financials in there for Coach Wilson's staff so he can keep a congruent force together? Greg Fry, Kevin Johns, some of the names that just jump out off the page.
Yeah, I mean, neither Wilson nor Fred Glass would necessarily, I talked to Glass on Monday night, they wouldn't necessarily commit to like a dollar figure or exactly how much. But Glass said, you know, he said, I've consistently sort of made more investments in that area, and I'm prepared to do it again. That was a big part of what Kevin and I talked about in getting this contract together. And Wilson, again, was equally vague. I don't think there are two men that like to keep kind of the nuts and bolts and the sausage making out of the press a little bit. But Wilson, again, was equally vague, but he also said, you know, I mean, he told this story about how Glass was talking to his staff one day, or either staff or his players, and he said that, you know, when Kevin comes and knocks on my door, it's never something for him. It's always something for you. It's always something for his assistant. It's always something for the program. And Wilson basically said the same thing, which is, you know, that we expect to remain competitive. We've kept the bulk of this staff together for a long time, and we've had guys, he said, even who've been approached with opportunities just since this season ended and have turned them down. Obviously, they did lose Mark Hill, so it's not like the staff hasn't been hit somewhere. It's been on the strength and conditioning side. But in both Fred Glass and Kevin Wilson, while they wouldn't discuss specific figures, both basically admitted that, yes, Indiana, as part of this new push in terms of, you know, paying the head coach more, Indiana is also prepared to be more competitive with assistant salaries.
Excellent stuff, as always, my friend. Safe travels to the Arctic Circle, otherwise known as Minneapolis-St. Paul for Indiana, and the Golden Gophers, 12:30 Big Ten Network on Saturday. We appreciate your time, as always. Safe trip, and we'll get caught up with you a little bit later in January to see how this schedule has worked itself out. But the Hoosiers have lots of things going in their favor right now, and exciting times for IU basketball.
Thanks for having me, class, as always.